Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Season 6 premiere of The Say Report! La la la. I'm your host, Devin Decker, and joining me, my host companion, Sejan Sarawick. Sejan?
I didn't realize we were going back, with our intro. It sounded like... Hey, man, I am so happy to be here after 6 years, man.
It is crazy that it is 6 years. But there's a tinge of sadness that is just over this whole episode. And I'm going to get it out of the way right at the top because I don't want that tinge of sadness to be the whole episode. And I certainly don't want to end on it. This title is the title of this episode, as you've seen since you downloaded it, is Betty White Would Have Been 100 Today. Because
it releases
on what would have been Betty White's 100th birthday. And I'm a little bit sad about it and a little bit happy. I'm not happy that Betty White is dead, right? It's sad that she got so close and she dropped it at the 10-yard line. Almost literally, right? It was, the 17-yard line is where she dropped the ball.
Yeah, if the scenario you want to use puts her in an antagonistic position to her own health, sure.
I'm sorry. You're right. Well, I mean, aren't we all technically in antagonistic positions to our own health?
I mean, if you really think about it. I think there's actually a pretty large subsect of people that are doing their damnedest to not be, so I would actually argue no.
But every...
Me and you, yes. Like, if on this show, sure, okay.
Knock wood or whatever. But it's one of those situations where I'm a little bit sad because... We've started recording on Sundays. That's one of the big changes that's happened in the pandemic to make sure that you have it as early as possible for your Monday listen of the Say Report. We're thinking about you, the listener, the fan. But for this specific episode, I was so nervous to do a Sunday recording and be like, happy 100th birthday, Betty White. And then for something terrible to happen... so that we look like idiots. But then People Magazine went ahead and just did that anyway.
Yeah, they beat us to it.
I cannot believe that they still released an issue with Betty White is 100.
I mean, you know, they're doing the leap year math that everybody online was doing the day she'd passed away. Like, I appreciate that the woman was beloved, and I am right there with everybody. I have no qualms whatsoever with Betty White. I think she was phenomenal, hilarious, and all of that, and sharp as a friggin' tack up until the end. Like, that kind of thing. The amount of people that are making it their personal duty to prove to the world that she made it to 100 years is weird. It's okay, everybody. It's okay. She 100 is not some magical number at which, like, God would have walked down and saved her or some shit. Like, what is going on?
Imagine if, like, you guys would have been all right. I was going to come down and give you the ability to turn pizza into pizza. Or
100 years old, your string turns to gold and I cannot cut it.
Wow, sweet Hercules reference. What is the weird?
I just need to know what the weird like comforting measure is to the idea that, well, if you don't count leap years, she was 100 already. Or, man, she didn't make it to 100. That's sad. And it's like, she made it to 99 and some odd days, guys. Like, I think we can celebrate
she
that.
She was 17 days away from 100. Mm. I think what it comes down to, what the real issue that the world has with it is we were all kind of looking forward to it. In a world right now where everything kind of sucks, that Betty White was going to make it to 100 years old was sort of... You remember that movie Children of Men? It came out 15 years ago, which is going to be an important number.
Yes,
And everybody is all, like, obsessed with, like, baby Dante or whatever the kid's name is.
Yeah, little Lucifer there, whatever his name
the
is.
The last human who's alive. It's something like Dante. I don't know. It's not like Gabriel. They didn't go, like, hyper-angelic with the name. Because at the time when they named the kid, they didn't know.
And that baby was Alfonso Corazon.
Was going to be the last child born before Children of Men disease started. But there's that whole thing where, like, they want to watch...
That's not what happens, by the way. You know that, right?
What?
That baby is born after the disease has... So, like, it's like a... That's what makes the... Never mind.
No, not the baby that he's protecting.
Oh,
The baby,
you mean Last Baby?
the
That
last
was.
baby, the one that like everybody watches and
Yeah,
he's sort
that's
of a
right.
celebrity because of it. Also,
Yeah.
in my mind, what I'm realizing is I have conflagrated the plot of Children of Men with a Jablot vampire novel I bought called Vamped, which this is fucking the dumbest shit, and I'm so sorry for doing this. I apologize to Alfonso Cuarón. I
Welcome to
apologize.
season six, everybody. Nothing has changed.
Nothing. Well,
Hey.
wait, if it changed, why would you keep watching? There's gonna be some changes, maybe. I don't know. But in Vamped, the vampires polluted the water supply, and that
Yep.
was enough to turn the entire population of the world into vampires.
Excellent,
And
excellent.
what they watch for entertainment is the last human child who has become sort of like a Truman Show style reality thing, and they watch him grow so that like they can have a markage of a passage of time. Like, it's a really weird thing. I don't know. It's I'm
Man,
sorry for bringing up Vamped on the
age means nothing in a world full of
show.
vampires. Man, that is a weird thought, actually. I love that. I love when you could find that with that little dime store novel that actually hits on something interesting. You know, not like clearly not enough to make it like blow up and become like a, you know, the next like Stephen King or anything like that, but there is something about the idea that just like they really had something. They really did have something.
I mean, that book explores so many interesting things. Like, for example, the protagonist, he finds a human child and decides to raise it until the age of like 21, at which point he will turn her so that he can like kind of have a weird project, which is
Yeah.
like creepy on another level. But like, you also need to think about, in a world of vampires, how do you pass the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, there's that whole thing. There's a really weird, and I guess this is why, like, years later, a friend had me read his vampire fiction novel, and it turned out to be like kind of a lesbian sex romp, for lack of a better descriptor.
Yeah.
I
Like
wasn't
feels like
expecting it.
nowadays that is like the big reveal of the e-publishing self-publishing world is we're all a little horny apparently, so
Yeah, it was something I was not expecting at all when I read this book. But then I thought back to Vamped, and I'm like, oh, Vamped had a very heavy talking about sex, but it wasn't so much, oh my God, we're having sex all the time because we're vampires. Like, there's just a whole chapter that is devoted to how vampires have sex.
Man, see, that is a great thing for the writer to have to themselves. Like, I understand how this particular mechanic works in my universe is a phenomenal piece of like lore building that you keep to yourself.
I gotta tell you, it's one of the more compelling chapters of it, because, vampires are undead.
Sound like
Like,
the biggest prude right now. Like, hey,
which is
why do I
crazy.
have to read about it?
Of the two of us, I'd think that you're, I mean, I don't know, I'm very sexually forward, but I don't know.
No, it's more about in terms of the machine and why a novel like that doesn't get picked up and get to do things is because, and I'm not saying because of sex, but because of the idea that they take an entire like everybody thinks they want to be Tolkien and they want to describe a hill for 30 pages, right? And then so that's what a lot of fantasy writers will do, and the first thing an editor will tell them is like, you're not Tolkien, you don't get to do this. He is allowed to do that because of who he is in the canon. You don't get to do this because you're nobody right now. So that kind of shit gets pulled. So it's not so much that I think that I don't want to read it. In fact, I think that is fascinating. And we could talk about how I've been getting into some really weird, like e-publishing, like shit. I had a friend of mine tell me, and I immediately had to pick up the first book in the series about a romance novel series, four books. Each book is a different Horseman of the Apocalypse. So,
Wow.
like, think like Danielle Steele, like Fabio on the cover, like romance novel, but each different book focuses on a different horseman of the apocalypse. And I'm only just started reading the first book, which is Pestilence. At least that was the one I was told
I
to start
certainly
with.
hope that Pestilence wears a condom during sex. That is the first thought that I have, is like, you're a STD factory,
Yeah. Well,
Pestilence.
and so this is, you know, this is a thing. Like the self-publishing world has really blown up in the last few years, even before COVID, but especially with COVID, because of the e-publishing stuff that has started to go on with things on Kindle and things like that, right? And so people have the opportunity to kind of pour themselves out there, and not necessarily get an editor, or at least not a good one or a good couple of rounds of ones like you would through a publishing house, for good or for real. I mean, like, part of the whole thing about this world that people are celebrating right now is the idea that people can finally get their shit out there. And there was a lot of gatekeeping in the book publishing world. That is true. It's just that it's that idea that like, it's like the internet now, like, and as far as like film and video went, like 20 years ago, that idea being like, you could do anything right now. And yeah, in about 10 years, we're going to start seeing the downside of that. And people are going to have to start putting their foot down about things. But for right now, sure. Like, let me read your Hasbro based sex romp with the Monopoly Man meets Twister or whatever. Like,
how do you have sex with Twister? Twister is the platform. It's not the person you would get.
Maybe
I actually figured
tool.
It out.
Maybe
I figured
it's the
it
tool
out.
He uses.
And I don't need to share it, but I think I got it. Something
Uncle
about
Moneybags just like pulls out the Twister board, and as soon as the Operation Man walks in the room, I don't know. Wait, where are we going with this?
I think I know what the hippos are hungry for.
There it is. I mean, but like, yeah, like it feels like sometimes when you're going through some of this stuff that like somebody's just throwing a dartboard, like a dart at a board, right? Like,
oh yeah,
like, okay, so they're all vampires, but it's also the Truman Show all in one novel. Like, yeah, like,
yeah, and then like, just not to spoil this novel that I honestly don't know if you could even get a copy of, but then the daughter that he is raising ends up finding the older version of, I think he's Baby Marco is his name. And they start dating because they're like the last two humans. But then they're both turned to vampires by the end of it. Because at the end of the day, you can't upturn the apple cart of the all vampire world. And God damn it, I'm telling how vampires have sex in this universe. Because it's like so simple and so intelligent in the fact that because they're undead, their skin is cold. So like, it wouldn't be fun to have sex. That's why they have to have sex in extremely hot showers.
It has to be in the shower. So why is there just pages and pages of shower sex? That has to be the shower because their blood is cold.
Their blood is... They have to warm up in order for sex to be enjoyable.
But if you're going to go so far as to say that their blood is cold, that would also mean then that they don't have the ability to have an erection, right?
Yeah, probably. We're not going to cover that, though. People are just going to... we're not going to talk about erections. People are just going to fill in that part of it. The other thing about this book... I promise. Nice. I'm going to finish up with this. 15 minutes, and then we're done talking about Vamped. And what a weird tribute to Betty White this has been. is the fact that... Also, it's one of those ones where when you become a vampire, your physiology changes, and they're actually more akin to, I will remember this forever. It is Animorphs number 2, where the Animorphs become ants.
Yeah, okay.
And they describe K.A. Applegate in great, like, absurd detail. Describes the circulatory system of an ant, which is the fact that ants are basically like turkey basters. Their hearts are full of blood, and then they squeeze, and it just shoots blood to the back of their body. Mm-hmm. And that's just how ant circulatory systems work.
Yeah. No, okay. So here's a secret about Animorphs that I don't think a lot of people were ever really honed in on, apparently, because at least this conversation would lead me to believe. They are technically supposed to be somewhat educational novels.
Right. Yes.
It's why they get produced by Scholastic eventually and all that, is because like the idea being that like while there is a lot of nonsense about turning into animals and stuff like that, the idea was that it was introducing you to the wildlife, right? And so like, yeah, I'm going to spend a couple of pages talking about the circulatory system of an ant right now is actually important in that context. Talking to me about why hot showers are going to get Edward Cullen hard, I don't need that. That's not something that's necessary.
The vampires in Twilight are very different from normal vampires, Sijin. They would be a subsect species. And that always makes me question, in the Twilight universe, if there are traditional vampires, and it's sort of like Blade 2 with the like weird proboscis vampires that are introduced.
Oh yeah, man. And the uber vamps, right?
Yeah,
isn't
those,
that what
like,
they're called
crazy
or something?
Things? Because yeah. There's also the fact that the Cullens and every vampire that we see are daywalkers like Blade.
Yeah.
It's just that the sun doesn't kill them. It makes them fabulous and glittery and sparkly.
Where is that movie? I want to see Peter Facinelli and Wesley Snipes getting together like 10 years ago to do Mr. Cullen Meets Blade.
That would be fantastic. Please make that happen.
I guess that's basically what Fastlane was.
If we're going to be honest, then yes. I don't know. It's
Where'd
nuts.
You go, Bill Bellamy? We miss you.
We are having a lot of fun on this season 6 premiere, and I love it. And that's it. But that's it. So that vampire book, their physiology changes, so they're akin to ants, which is another weird thing. So I don't know. It's just, is a book. Look for Vamped if you want to. I have no connection to it other than the fact that I was going to be stuck at Mohican Sun because I did a gig. You know where I live in Rhode Island, right? You're familiar with where I live in Rhode Island?
Yes, considering the state is 45 minutes wide, exactly. I could even make an estimate and still be pretty damn close, but
yeah.
Yes.
But are you familiar with the Mishnock Barn, which is literally a stone's throw away from my home?
No. I mean, is this like a haunted, but is this where the headless horseman comes
it's
out?
It's a country line dance hall.
Okay.
And that band that I was booking in 2009, I talked about it last week's episode, I had booked them to play a show there once. So then when I got information about we'd like you to play the barn again, I booked it. And it turns out, unbeknownst to me, that there are two barns. There's also a barn out in like Plainfield, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we're talking about entertainment venues, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where people will sell anything, especially in New England. If it's over 100 years old, then they'll slap a $2,000 a night price tag on it and call it a venue hall. So I'm not surprised to hear that there are multiple barns.
Right. And I didn't realize that. So it's in Connecticut, but I booked the gig because it was a solid gig. It was a nice paying gig. But we ended up having to schlep out to Plainfield, Connecticut. And one of the people who helped us was a friend I had in Connecticut. And he's like, I can help you guys schlep your stuff out there, but I then have to work a gig at Mohegan Sun. So, like, you're going to be stuck with me till, like, 3 a.m. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Can we stop by Job Lot on the way to Mohegan Sun? And I bought this dollar novel about vampires and read it until 3 a.m. And then, like, I was ready to go home. Let's just be honest about that.
Yeah, man. Used to be tradition for me when I was going into Boston all the time for Providence. It's a 45-minute train ride, and you can pick the train up in right in Providence Station and be in Boston within the hour. And I used to love going either direction, showing up early to the train station, going to the bookstore and finding the cheapest thing that they had on the shelves and buying a copy of it. Sometimes it was a book I recognized, sometimes it wasn't. I mean, it's how I got into like Pratchett and stuff. Is like I was just like I just needed something to read. And so I don't know, this thing was $10 and I'd get like a few pages into it and realize, hey, this is part of a larger series. Next thing I know, I'm reading the entirety of Discworld, like that kind of shit. Go buy a book, guys. Like 2022 season 6 of the Slayer Report. This is going to be our whole mantra. Go buy a book.
Go buy a book. It is. It's worth it. I've read some crazy stuff. I'm kind of excited to find the weird novelization of Ghostbusters Afterlife after having read the Ghostbusters 1 and 2 novelizations.
There's got to at least be a junior novelization.
I don't want
now,
a junior
right?
novelization, though. That's the thing. I want the adult one because the junior novelization of Ghostbusters Answer the Call was disappointing. Like,
besides, we need to know how ghost sex works.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to know what happens when Zool and Vince Clortho get together. That's what I need written.
Oh, man,
look at that. So
Dan Aykroyd wrote it for you, by the way, if you're wondering. Dev, what's going on?
Well, I guess the last thing is Betty White, right? And the whole Tontine of it all. Like, she definitely won the Tontines for the Mary Tyler Moore Show and the Golden Girls. There's no doubt in my mind that. And, well, I don't know. Do you when you do a spinoff, do you do a second Tontine? Is there a split-off Tontine?
Cheech Marin is there. You do.
So then Cheech Marin is going to win the one for Golden Palace, right? Why is Golden Palace on Hulu? I don't know.
Wait a minute. You say Cheech Marin's gonna win, but isn't Don Cheadle the other like young lead in that? And
no, Don Cheadle was in an episode of the regular show. I don't think he's in Golden Palace, is he?
I'm pretty sure that they put him on the damn card for it.
Okay,
so
well then
if
that's
he's not.
I thought Don Cheadle was in that episode that they cut out because of the blackface. I thought that he appeared in that episode.
Maybe that's why he ends up showing.
Maybe Golden that Palace. Right as I don't know. I haven't watched Golden Palace. I just think it's crazy that it's on there. Like, what a weird way to honor Betty White, because it dropped at the beginning of this year.
Yeah,
I don't know. Other weird ways to honor Betty White is that they had sold like Fathom Events was going to do a Betty White's birthday thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow or today, right? It's the 17th when you're listening to this. And after she passed, they're like, we're still going to do it. It's just going to be a celebration of Betty White. But arguably the reason that I bought that ticket was because it was going to be a live simulcast with Betty White.
Yeah. There's a weird element to it that's like, no, we're going to keep our money.
Yeah, like, it's we're going to keep our money is definitely what it feels like.
And it's just like, that's not the...
But, you know, if I am Valerie Bertinelli, Wendy Malick, and Jane Krakowski, or Daphne from Frasier, I said I was going to look up her the way to pronounce her name, and I didn't do it, and I apologize for that. Mm-hmm. They got to be happy that their hot in Cleveland Tontine is now, like, alive and well, and one of them is going to win it. That's right, hot in Cleveland jokes.
But Don Cheadle's definitely a main character on that show.
Okay,
he's in every
episode. I got those two confused. Thank you for confirming that. Apologies to Don Cheadle. Yeah, so Don Cheadle's probably going to be the one to walk away with the Tontine money on Golden Palace. And good for Don Cheadle is what I have to say.
You're always coming into the end and stealing and getting that gold.
Oh, I'm man. Getting that gold.
Shit.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so that's everything. Those are the weird sort of carryovers from last season that I wanted to make sure we covered. Vampire sex and showers, definitely on my list. But, yeah, now we're here, and it's season 6, and I kind of want to, at this moment, announce the big deal, the big thing that's coming in season 6 that I'm very excited about, and there's two of them.
Okay.
And I wanna start with the start, right? The one that's actually happening next week. I can't believe that it's happening next week. I can't believe that tomorrow, in real time, we're going to finally get a series that is the Distaff counterpart to How I Met Your Mother with How I Met Your Father.
I feel like we've been talking about How I Met Your Dad and How I Met Your Father possibilities since this show started, huh?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I have the pilot. I was able to get the pilot of How I Met Your Dad, and it has always sort of fascinated me that was their plan, was what that show was.
Yeah.
Because, spoilers for How I Met Your Dad and next episode, at the end of the episode, they reveal who the father is.
Yeah, they don't wait. They're like, we're not getting dragged through the fucking mud again.
we're going to reveal the identity of the father right here, right now. And that's a whole thing. And it's also kind of weird because with Bob Saget passing away and now we're revisiting How I Met Your Mother, it just, everything sort of seems weirdly interconnected. But what we're going to do, and we've done one of these before, but now we're actually giving it a name, right? Give it a name, just like Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. We're doing an epic-sode. I'm so proud of the term epic-sode. I probably shouldn't be. But we're doing an epic-sode where we're going to, first of all, Will's going to be here next week. There's going to be a quiz. And I'm going to have to swallow all of my hatred for Josh Radnor. Because we're going to watch the first season of How I Met Your Mother, rewatch the pilot of How I Met Your Dad, and then as much as available of How I Met Your Father. I hope it's the first season. I hope that Hulu hasn't picked up from like Disney Plus and Apple TV the whole let's do one episode a week, it works sort of scenario. I feel like that's what's going to happen with How I Met Your Father, though. I mean,
I thought they were already doing it. I could have sworn that Hulu already had stuff of its own that it was doing weekly. But, I mean, you know, I might be conflating it with other stuff. It just seems such like it's such a part of the DNA of streaming nowadays that I am not going to be disappointed or surprised if that's what happens.
Right. Well, the last one that I watched when it was new was for our first episode, which was High Fidelity. where we watched the movie, read the book. I ended up buying a copy of the Broadway script. And then, you know, lastly, we watched the new TV show. And we saw how well that all ended up for the new High Fidelity. So this really seems like the first show where if Hulu were going to change its release method, they would start it with.
Yeah.
Especially when you think
about...
What was
Love Victor? Was Love Victor a drop?
Love Victor all dropped. Both seasons. Because Love Victor, that was going to be our second episode. And that just didn't work out. And honestly, I don't blame anyone for that because Love Victor dropped on a weird day. I think it dropped on a Thursday.
It dropped into reality and out as fast as it dropped in and out of our ability to record about it.
I honestly can't believe that it got a second season. Like, I really want to watch it. The first season was incredible, but it was another one that all dropped at once. But when you look at Hulu and how they're sort of shifting for 2022, like The Orville, it seems like it's going to be Orville the Next Generation with the addition of a subtitle and the fact that it's been, oh my God, 3 years since a new episode of The Orville.
Yeah.
I expect that Hulu's original Orville series will have some differences. Especially when you consider that it's still being produced under COVID guidelines and everything like that, right?
Right, right.
So I don't know. But it seems like the thing to do now with streaming is definitely to do the weekly dribble out. And now that Hulu is under the Disney banner, right? Because they got that when they bought Fox, right?
Right.
Sorry, I'm saying right a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if after all of the success they've had with the Disney Plus release model, it migrated over to Hulu. Especially when the only other streaming platform that is not doing weekly releases is Netflix.
Well, and some of their shows they're not. Some of their shows they're doing the half season thing. But there are a handful of weekly releases, or maybe they've all ended by now. But
I know Chelsea, whatever her last name is, had one.
Chelsea Handler had one.
They had like a Talk Soup type show, didn't they? With Joel McHale.
Yep.
I don't watch any of these shows, so I don't know if they're still going. But those were like weirdly weekly releases. But they felt like they were weekly releases because they were relevant and sort of the time. Like, we want to make sure that we give it a week so that everything we're saying is going to be correct. It sort of felt like their way of competing with something like Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Well, it's the acknowledgement that there are certain types of shows that need to be released weekly. And then the question becomes, what kind of show is that, right? Like, are there scripted shows that also would benefit from a weekly release? And I'll be entirely honest. One of the things that about How I Met Your Father that I think it would benefit from a weekly release, or at least a parsed out release a la Netflix, in terms of like 10 episodes now and then a promise of like 10 or 12 episodes by like Easter or something, right? I don't know what the math is on any of that, because it's another one of those things where behind the scenes, like, why does Netflix do the things that it does? Why does Hulu seem to, like, why wouldn't Hulu do the weekly release? Because its bread and butter is getting people to come back every week to watch television. And why not take advantage of that as, like, as kind of one of their, it's what makes them stand out from the crowd, is the idea that I can get shows that are on this week and I can get this week's episode in a way that I can't on Netflix and I can't on Amazon necessarily and things like that. So why would they not kind of go along with that, I guess, is my thinking, in their own stuff. But as you've said, they've definitely not done that with their own releases before. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if they do, but I've not gotten the impression that that's the deal with it.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be everything dropped, and I think it's going to be 10 episodes. Like, I'm only applying everything I know from how Hulu has worked before, which is why we're giving ourselves that sliding scale to say however much How I Met Your Father is available before we record our next episode, that's what we're going to be carrying. So if it's just like the first two episodes, then it's just going to be the first two episodes, and we'll judge accordingly with the How I Met Your Mother coverage, right?
Yeah.
We won't compare 22 episodes of that first season against a single episode of How I Met Your Father.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to watch the show. I have a lot of questions. I think it's a very silly endeavor to even bother, like, with the cast alone and the concept being such a vague one compared, like the How I Met Your Mother plot is kind of vague and it's romantic comediness of it all. So why make it a How I Met Your, like, series? Like, what is it about that particular universe that they are trying to invoke in a sitcom that they couldn't have just done any other sitcom? I don't know. We'll talk about it.
We're excited to explore it, because Sijin's not wrong. That is a question that I have as well, especially where the cast seems to be tugging at your nostalgia.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Heartstrings. And it has to connect to the first series in some way. They've said that it connects in some way. And again, I'll reiterate my theory that I think that she's going to be Barney's daughter, because why not? But then the also thing is that show ended, right? How I Met Your Mother ends in 2030. So we're 8 years removed from that. Is How I Met Your Father going to be in 2022, or is it going to be in the future?
Yeah. That's what makes it so weird, because if it's Barney's kids, doesn't she have to be the same age as the kids would have been on the show? I don't know.
She actually would be younger, so that wouldn't work, because he doesn't have the kid until 5 years after the end of the series.
Yeah,
so that actually doesn't work at all. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Maybe the bar they go to is puzzles.
The other two big streaming services, by the way, that really lean into the weekly release stuff, and it works for them, and this is more because this is what I've been doing a bunch with my time lately, is Apple TV, and the other one is HBO. I mean, like, HBO, right, famously, like, their whole thing is that we'll have the episode up immediately as it plays, but that then lends itself to a weekly schedule of releases, right? So it just seems like there's plenty of people doing that nowadays, and as far as Hulu is concerned, like, that was always the thing that made them stand out from a Netflix. So I don't know why they wouldn't lean into the weekly release.
Especially with a show like How I Met Your Father, where the reason why How I Met Your Mother was able to rise to its weird nadir status in popular culture was because of that weekly drip feeding of information. They essentially took the lost storytelling method and applied it to a half-hour sitcom.
Right.
So if you're just going to give us everything at the beginning, what's going to keep me coming back for this series? But I'd really like to jump on that HBO train that pulled into the station.
Yeah.
Because a show premiered on HBO Max this past Thursday that I know I'm in love with. I cannot speak for Sijin, but he did set up a segue for me. So I have to imagine that he's making peace right now. That he's Christopher Makepeace from Meatballs.
Yep, Meatballs the TV show, kids. It's back. Your favorite comedies. Peacemaker dropped this week. And I have not dove into it as much as Devin has. I can already tell. And that's interesting for a couple of different reasons. So for anybody that doesn't know, the Suicide Squad, right? And that's the right one.
Suicide Squad, like the Ohio University.
You joke, but this is literally the differentiator. The Suicide Squad, which came out in August of last year, hit really well. Not necessarily on this show. Go back and listen to our talks about it. I may be misremembering, but I walked away from that movie enjoying it, but not thinking it was anything that was going to rock the world. And Devin walked away from it actually not enjoying it. And that's kind of simplifying it. Go listen to the episode for more. But
it's called the Suicide Squad. It's pretty easy to find.
And that being said, the like weird kind of background announcement that they were going to take John Cena's Peacemaker character from that movie and give him his own series. There was a number of kind of bells that went off in my head that made me really excited. I mean, first of all, so anybody that watched that movie, spoiler alert, there is a mid-credit scene or end credit scene, whatever, where what happens to Peacemaker in that movie is revealed to not be everything, shall we say that way. So if you watch that movie, didn't watch for the credits, and then you were like, how the hell are they making a show out of that character? Well, go back and watch that movie again. But then on top of that, you know, like, what kind of stories are they going to tell? Like, Peacemaker is a really, really interesting DC character. Do you know what I learned about him in all of this? I never knew this. I knew that the original concept that Alan Moore had for Watchmen was it was going to be the Justice League. And it was going to be, like, all the events of Watchmen taking place, and it would have been Superman and Batman, not Doc Manhattan and the Owl. And, like, that is...
It completely changes that story for you if you just insert them and know that that's how it was written.
So the original concept and of the comedian is Peacemaker. The death of Peacemaker was going to be the setting, was going to be the thing that set off that entire story. And at the time, that would have been a perfect character to do it with. He's not anybody that had a long string of fandom. There was nobody out there that was going to be up in arms about the loss of a character like Peacemaker, especially at that time in comics, because they would kill somebody one week and the next week a new line of theirs would come out and nobody would ask any questions, because it wasn't like now where everybody was on the internet and arguing with each other about whether or not the timelines made sense and all that sort of crap. It was a simpler time. No, like, that's bullshit. But, like, the idea being that, like, having a character like that who was already a very political concept for DC, and so the idea of being able to, first of all, get rid of that character for a little bit in the 80s probably was super appealing. But on top of that, like, the ways in which it would have kicked off a Watchmen-esque story but involving people like Wonder Woman would have been just amazing. So there's been a lot of really weird stuff coming up about this character, all because HBO's decided to lean into it. And I don't know why or how or where or when this concept came to be, because I knew nothing of it. It was just one day in, like, I think, like, October or November, like, there was just a tidbit announced about how they were starting to see shots coming out from the filming of it. And I was like, what is this? So, like, it had a mystery element to me, for me. On top of that, I enjoyed my time with the Suicide Squad enough that, like, more of this character. I think I actually said in that episode that I would definitely watch a sequel to that movie. I don't know if I'll ever go back and watch that one again of my own accord.
That seems like exactly how you said it. Like, this was good. It established a lot of great things, but I don't know if I ever need to watch it again.
Exactly. And so this was kind of exactly what I mean in that case. Like, give me more of the characters in that world without me having to go back and sit through that particular story again. And I'm on board. So I was very excited about this. Like, and it just kind of came out of nowhere. And then on top of that, it's a bit of a blast, man. It's got some style to it.
All right, so I can make sure that I am, like, filtering myself. How many of the three available episodes have
only
you watched?
First.
Okay, only the first. That's perfect to know, because I don't want to ruin anything for you. Yeah. And that is only the first. How did you stop with that ending to the first episode?
Legitimately, because people that I've watched the movie with, or people that I've heard talk about the movie, I wanted to see if they wanted to get on board with watching with me, because I was like, oh no, this is fun. Like I was the only one out of my group that I think was willing to kind of dive back into that universe, and I am now interested in seeing if anybody else is curious about it, considering that you're not the only person that's come to me and been like, I didn't like the movie, but this show is awesome. Like, that seems to be a large consensus amongst people that didn't necessarily enjoy the movie when it came out. There's a lot of people that are like, this is what I wanted. Like, this is more of what I expected from that sort of stuff. And then anybody that liked the movie is being like, yeah, more Peacemaker. So, like, it's kind of winning on all fronts right now.
I mean, the only reason I checked it out is because it was John Cena and this show. This show is the reason where I'm like, I'll watch the first episode, especially when we've covered so much DCEU material on this series. It's why I'm going to see the Batman, even though the Batman looks kind of like a goofy mess. And a lot of that comes from the fact that my experience with the Batman is the toy line. And you have a Catwoman who has, like, big mittens that slip over her hands to make her look like Catwoman, which is just, it's so Kate Sith, I don't even know how to deal with it. And then, like, you have Drifter Batman, which is Batman in a big puffy leather coat, and you can buy his motorcycle, and I'm just like, I don't know what this movie is going to be. Riddler's in it, but
it's also very reminiscent for anybody that isn't aware. Matt Reeves is diving into the very specifically the Batman detective line
yeah.
of stuff. And so it's coming from a very different place than, say, like the action heavy Nolan-esque Batman stuff. Like, I don't think that we're going to see this Batman win every fight in the movie like you would have with Christian Bale. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
or Ben Affleck.
So there is like this idea of like the gritty realism when applied to Batman can definitely lean into the goofy if it's not handled well. And it is a huge risk with this movie. I personally am super on board with it. But look at like Gotham. Part of the reason that Gotham, the television series, has so many ups and downs is because it cannot always nail this exact balance of like the goofiness of the world of Batman mixed with the seriousness of the fact that they want to talk about like murder and mobsters, like, right? And that balance has already proven to be kind of a hard one to hit over the five seasons of Gotham. But we'll see what happens with the Batman. Matt Reeves is a decent enough director and writer for me that I'm on board already, but you're not wrong. Some of the stuff that's come out of it in terms of images and things like that do look like somebody who's trying a little too hard.
Yeah. Without context, it all looks goofy as shit to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I am going to go out and give it the context of checking it. I'm probably not going to go out to the theater. It's going to be one that I wait until it comes home, especially with the track record of things like Wonder Woman 84 and The Suicide Squad. But it's something that I will watch. And if I didn't do the save report, it might have a lower priority than it currently does, which brings us back to Peacemaker. So it was one of those situations where Thursday I had to take my parents to a medical appointment. So I was working from home. And I brought them to their appointment, and then I just had to like sit at home until I got the call to go pick them up again. So I got to take a lunch at home, which is very different from taking lunch at the office, because I feel okay watching a TVMA show while I'm making lunch at home, as opposed to on work internet.
For sure.
And sorry, Dale, I know I made it seem like I hadn't already watched the first episode, but I watched the first episode at lunch that day. And I would have kept going, but I'm like, no, I'm going to stop. I'm going to watch the first episode with Dale, because I think all of the things that are present in this show will work for her. And what Dale said after we watched that first episode was, how in 40 minutes was that better than anything on display in the Suicide Squad? Which really kind of put everything into perspective for me. Like, I'm not alone in feeling this show is so different from what we got in that movie that introduced this character.
Yeah, well, one of the things that it's important to remember about that movie is that movie was in the works and being processed long before the people like James Gunn and John Cena got involved. Right. That's not to say that the product that eventually ended up on display was not hugely influenced and attributable to a guy like James Gunn. Like, there definitely was James Gunn-ness to that movie. Like, let's not joke around about that. But the idea being that this is a product solely of their creation. You know what I mean? We got to design this thing from the get-go with our input. We didn't come in and save a script with an actor that had dropped out and concepts that had to be on display because there was no way that he was not going to be able to feature 40 minutes of a Harley plotline, a Harley singular plotline in that movie, because that was just like basically a fucking requirement for that movie to get made. Like, and so there's certain restrictions and boundaries that were placed on that movie that I think we talked about all of this when we watched that movie that definitely put it in a weird place already as like a project. And whereas this feels like free reigns, like you get to do the thing you actually want to do.
Do you know the origin behind this series?
I have to imagine that it's just for John Cena and James Gunn getting like drunk in that bar on set where they have that dance scene in the movie. And like they like midnight, they're just like, fuck, man, I don't want to stop doing this.
James Gunn, bored at home during the pandemic, just banged out an 8-episode TV show for Peacemaker. And he's like, I doubt it's going to get made, but like, I have this story that I want to tell. So he just wrote it as a way to stave off pandemic boredom. And then like HBO's like, what do you got? And he's like, well, I got this. And they're like, we're fucking doing it. which is the coolest story ever to me.
And it comes from the success, you know, like, we cannot forget that as much as we found that movie lacking in some places, like, that movie is, by all accounts, one of their more successful DCEU endeavors, yeah. Right?
I mean, so, we like, say that, but it's also considered a bomb of 2021. It's, no, it exists in this weird area.
But the word bomb has lost all meaning. That's in 2021. That's true, yes. Because everybody talks about that, and then they look at are friggin' ticket sales, and that doesn't work.
That doesn't work in that. Because, yeah, everything that went, like we've talked about it before, everything that released in theater on HBO Max is considered a bomb, which is crazy because, no, it wasn't, because Warner Brothers was like, yeah, let's do a show with really a C-list character. Peacemaker is not one of the big three or even like a Justice League buddy. I'd almost go D-list when it comes to his character.
No, the idea being like he's a character that literally anything can happen with. Even if like it's a weird demarcation in comic book franchises, like, period. Not just on in movies, but also television shows. Even like audiobooks and comic lines and novelization. Like there is a certain line at which there's a character you can fuck with and there's characters you can't. Right? Like if Batman shows up and you don't have to, and you don't talk about mom and dad getting shot in an alley. Like you're kind of missing like a key thing about Batman that nobody's going to forgive you for. Right. Whereas like Peacemaker, nobody knows that stuff. Nobody holds it to such a chord that like, oh, he's going to die at the end of the series. And that's to the end of his character. Okay. Like that's, I'm not saying that's actually what's happening, by the way. That wasn't a spoiler. That's just me pointing. I just realized that I said that as if that's what this is all leading towards. And I don't know.
Inspired by The Watchmen, where it wasn't Peacemaker. It was Comedian.
Right.
Like,
right.
And, so it's a weird tonal divide between those two things. Yeah. No, right now Peacemaker, as far as we know, is going to be alive till the end. We're only three episodes in and season's only one episode in. So,
well, and it's not ignored that it was supposed to be Peacemaker and Watchmen, but I mean, like, that's not the reason that the Watchmen ends up not being about the Justice League. It's because of the idea of the inclusion of people like Superman and Batman and the idea of Superman being so cold that he leaves Earth. Well, that was never going to be allowed. So yeah. That's why it can't be them. But when they go on to do Doomsday Clock, just to kind of touch back on that as something that I was looking into last year and it was so disappointing I only talked about it once on the show, there is a moment in Doomsday Clock where Peacemaker ends up getting to lead the like the team against, I believe, Doc Manhattan in a moment. Mm-hmm. And it is because he has come to this realization that the person that he would have become in their universe, like, he doesn't mesh with them any more than the Comedian did. And it's actually a really interesting moment where, like, DC basically acknowledges that overlap of the characters as well. It's weird. Peacemaker is such a weird character to have hit out of that movie, and a lot of that is, I think, attributable not just to Gunn's writing of him, but John Cena's portrayal.
Oh, it's John Cena. That's the other thing. Like, one of the other reasons why I'm willing to watch this, I freaking love John Cena. He seems to be up for anything. He's kind of like friendly Channing Tatum times two.
That's weird, because Channing Tatum is, by all accounts, a pretty cool dude. Is there something I don't know about Channing Tatum?
Channing Tatum, I there's no issue there. I love Channing Tatum, but it kind of feels like if we take two Channing Tatums and combine them, we get John Cena with just the bulk of it, but also as willing to do whatever he wants as Channing Tatum is. I feel like John Cena is twice as willing to do it. This is a guy who's in Daddy's Home too.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this goes, I think there's a sliding scale of actors that have moved away from the WWE or F at this point. I forget what they call themselves now.
WWE, the World Wildlife Fund is pandas and stuff.
Right. But there's a sliding scale of dudes that have moved away from that. And I think at the far, far end, you have guys like Dave Bautista, who he's really, really, really working on trying to prove that he is not just the big guy to be in a movie with a little kid type actor, right? He's done it. My Spy, right? Wasn't that the one that came out a couple years ago?
I love that movie.
But he is purposely working with guys like James Gunn, but also what's his nuts with Dune there, and
yeah. I don't want to say Villeneuve's name again. It's so hard, and yet here you made me do it.
But he's he's making it a point to kind of work in these fields that are unexpected and not above him, because he's definitely pulling it off. But this idea being like he's making a concerted effort to not be that guy. Then you have Dwayne The Rock Johnson right in the middle, where he wants those kinds of roles, but he also understands the value of putting food on the table. So like he's like, I'll do Jungle Cruise too, because that's what's going to get me the opportunity to then go out there and do some other weirder roles, right? But then you have John Cena at the other end completely, who is just like, you put a script in his hand, and if he's got time to do it, it feels like it's very much like a Danny Trejo approach to like, as long as I'm working, man, there's a smile on my face. It's just like, all right. So like, you want to support that, right? Like you want to be behind a guy that's doing that. But all of them are working towards this effort of like bigger careers than just what the WWE was forcing them into. I actually like spent a lot of time over the Christmas break with a friend of mine that is super into wrestling still, plus is into like movies, and it's hard to not eventually talk about that like overlap where the WWE has started like making movies about 10-15 years ago with their name on it, just so that they could put their stars in it. And now they've gotten to the point where they make movies that don't even have wrestlers in them anymore. They just produce film on certain films that are out there. And these three guys are really interesting examples of guys that got like one chance from the WWE. If you're like John Cena, where like he did, I think, The Marine, and I think he did like one other WWE based film, but then he was pretty much like able to just kind of walk away and do his own thing. But it was because of guys like Dwayne Johnson, who straight up was just like went to war
Hollywood
with his contract. Yeah. Like, well, he's very specifically went up against Vince McMahon and his contract and said like, look, I have the ability to make it my own. So if your answer is I don't want any of you any percentage of The Rock, and you're going to cut me out, fine, cut me out, I'll be fine. And basically, like, they took their chance and they cut him loose, and they were very wrong, because he went on to now become one of the greatest, like the biggest box office draws, right? And they didn't necessarily want to do that again with guys like Cena or Bautista and stuff like that. And like seeing the ways in which they've had to really kind of work themselves out of these contracts, and then what it means to them once they're out, the kind of projects they want to do, has been really, really interesting to watch between like the three of them and others. But the three of them specifically are I think the kind of body type that you could see would be offered the same roles on a regular basis, and the ones that they accept and the ones that they don't is really interesting.
I mean, the other thing, though, I just want to make sure that with Dave Bautista, is he's also out there trying to do anything that he can. He just wants to make sure that he's not pigeonholed. So that's why he'll do things like Escape Plan 2 and 3. Because I'm working with Sylvester Stallone, right? Who, for say what you will about Sylvester Stallone, he was a big part of independent Hollywood in the 70s.
I mean, he's an Oscar-winning writer, like, in that time. Like, yeah. But he is so vocal and so open about the fact that he is like, it has to, like, he won't just do anything. He's like, he has outwardly called out guys like Dwayne Johnson for being willing to do anything. He has talked about the idea being that he will work on Escape Plan 2 and 3 because somebody like Stallone is there. He wouldn't just do it just because somebody walked up to him and said, here's $6 million to save our franchise. And he's like, no, that's not me. I'm not your guy for that. Like, he wants to be doing the characters like in Dune. And he said he's willing to go in and do a movie without any contract for any future films, which is ridiculous. We talked about this when we talked about Dune, the idea that that's just the first part of what has to be at least a two-part, I think three-part series. And they didn't sign anybody on for the other parts. It was a huge gamble to be like, if this one hits, we might make two. And if we do, I hope you'll be willing to come back. And he was. He very much was, because those are the kinds of movies he wants to be making. So he's willing to start a franchise without a contract because of that, which is unique, but someone in his position had the ability to do that. So like, yes, he is willing to do some things that not everybody necessarily would be, but I don't think he's necessarily somebody I'd lump in the like, I'll do it if I'll do anything I can. Like, I think he's very picky and choosy, by his own admission. I think he's very picky and choosy about the kinds of projects he does versus somebody like a John Cena, who, like, if he showed up on the Wiggles next week, I don't think I'd be surprised.
Actually, the Wiggles stopped performing because one of them passed away. My dad will not stop talking about it.
I mean, the Wiggles, look, they're a rotating cast of characters, so if one of them passed away, I'm sure they're taking some time, but the Wiggles have been around for 25 years.
Oh, I know. It was, it's just my father won't shut up about it, and it's weird that you bring it up. No, anyway. I guess I just want to make sure that there is that nuance with Dave Bautista. It's not just I'm going to only take prestige roles. It's more the fact that he considers every role that is given to him. It's not just, no, I want to do Dune, I want to do that. Because you have things where he will look at something like Escape Plan 2 and say, hey, you know what, the chance to work with Sylvester Stallone, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that your scale is correct, but I do, all of them at the end of the day are willing to take roles that other people would determine as maybe career suicide.
When you show me the Christopher Plummer of WWE actors, like, we can maybe expand the scale a little bit. But I think for now, I'm pretty comfortable putting Dave Bautista at the top of that list as the pickier.
Oh yeah, he's definitely picky. Scale. But I want to make sure that pickiness has not avoided him doing something like Escape Plan 3. It's really Escape Plan 3 that I think. Why did you do this one, David? Like.
Well, maybe that's the one that taught him to maybe not do movies like that again.
Because Hades was really interesting, and his role in it was meaty. Like, he got to do a lot with it. I don't want to talk about the Escape Plan movies anymore. I'd like to get back to Peacemaker, and the fact that in the first minute it had me by the short hairs along for the ride. And when we watched that first episode together, Dale and I, 3 hours just sat down watching everything that was available because of just how compelling they made it. They've really taken that whole comic book mantra of ended on a cliffhanger so that you're waiting with bated breath and like salivating for the next month's issue and applied it to a television series magnificently. To the fact that I'm so upset that it ended with the third episode because I just want to know more about the world.
Yeah.
I can't believe, dude, you got to get down to that second episode. I don't know, how were you even surviving after he blows a woman up?
Yeah.
It's great. It's very enjoyable. And I did not think that I would be the person having these feelings about a Peacemaker TV show. And yet here I am. And also it ties into the whole weekly release schedule that HBO Max is a big fan of. But they're also smart because they give you three episodes at the top.
Yep.
Like, Doom Patrol has done that with every season that has been released. Is, here's three episodes, which is enough for you to decide, am I invested in this story or not? And generally, you are.
Yeah.
After that. I don't know. It's exciting stuff. We need to talk about the other thing that's coming with season 6 of The Save Report, though. We got a little distracted by John Cena. And that is, the 6th season of The Say Report represents a 15-year anniversary for Seijin and I. And if you listen to the ASCU, this is no surprise to you, but while Seijin and I first met in 2005, the friendship, the bond that we have that allows us to do The Say Report every week, that really wasn't truly forged and finished until 2007.
Yeah, and it is here on our crystal anniversary that Devin and I are gonna kind of take you guys back with us to kind of revisit some of the stuff that year that I mean was a huge part of our bonding as friends. You know, like, we spent a lot of time in the movies, Dev.
Not only did we spend a lot of time in the movies, we spent a lot of time in the car driving to the movies, because while there was a cinema 15 minutes away from URI campus, we decided, let's go to Cinema World in Lincoln. And all honestly, I can't blame us for doing it. Number one, there was this girl that I had a little crush on who worked at the Hollywood Video, because I had worked with her a couple of times. So, excuse to visit the Hollywood Video in Lincoln almost every time. Thank you, Seijin, for having my back on that. I believe I've thanked you before, but that was the thing. The other thing is Cinema World, on Tuesdays, you could get a movie ticket for $5. And I don't mean, like, it was around $5. I mean, you said, I would like a ticket for this movie. You gave them a $5 bill, and you got that ticket.
Yeah, and it was it was such a great way for us to just see just 1,000 movies in a year. It was nuts. So what was really the big thing for me was not necessarily just like the driving out there and going to the movie, but also that then meant that we then had, you know, a 40-minute time together guaranteed driving back from right. Lincoln to talk about the movies, to really kind of dig into some of these same conversations. I mean, in a lot of ways, without that kind of time together, then doing this kind of stuff, like, this is what breeds what you guys have listened to for the last 6 years.
Exactly. The fact that we were able to drive 40 minutes to Lincoln, sit through at minimum 2 2-hour movies, and then drive 40 minutes home and not be at each other's throats, be able to engage and enjoy each other's company for such a long amount of time, that's how we're able to do the Say Report. That's yeah. the secret sauce. And this season, we are looking at those films that, in 2007, Siege and I have learned a lot of things about 2007 in putting together the list of movies that we're going to be exploring in this endeavor.
Is it a spoiler if I say that, man, 2007 was a mediocre year for film?
is a huge spoiler, but it's also probably the Siege's gambit of this one that need to understand, is that the world was ready for what happened in 2008 after the just fields of mediocrity that we've harvested in 2007. Mm-hmm. And so, spoilers, that a lot of the movies, they might not be the greatest films ever created that we're looking at. And for example, in January, our very special episode is going to be Ocean's 13, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's interesting because we've always tried to make it a point that we don't always look at quote unquote good movies, but what we always look at are culturally important ones. Like, so good or for ill, these are movies that have come out that have affected the zeitgeist at least long enough for it to be worth talking about on a weekly show. Right. So whether that's new releases, old movies, all that, we always want to make sure that the products that we are looking at, there's a reason behind it. Right. And so excuse us for being a little self-indulgent this year, but we've decided that we're going to try and color that as much as possible with things that are also just important to us, right? Like, and it's not that the past films have not been important to us. It's not that we'll not talk about movies that, quote unquote, don't matter to us. But it's that idea that, like these movies, we've talked a lot on the show over its entirety about how we are shaped by the context in which we take things in, and the context in which we take things in are shaped by those things themselves, right? Like it is a circle of the ways in which, like, culture,
like a circle. Like, it's not a rectangle.
It's not a circle.
That's got a bunch of ends. It's a circle.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, man. Yeah. See, you're just shaped by the things that are around you and the ways in which you take them in. And this is such an opportunity for us to talk about specifically how we and how this show was formed by a year's worth of going to these movies and seeing these movies. And again, not all of them were bangers, right? But that didn't stop us from, right?
If we went and saw a bad movie, right? Or a movie that wasn't up to snuff, right? Because, I don't know, I enjoy most of these movies as I think back on them. At the time, I felt like I enjoyed them. But if we went to a movie that, like, pop culture and critics probably wasn't, like, as excited about as we ended up being, we still had nothing else to talk about for that drive home, except for the 4 hours of cinema we just experienced. So it was either drive in silence and disappointment or try to have a conversation.
You know, it's all part of it's all kind of part of the recipe for what makes us tick, what makes this show tick, and in the end, what we believe is what makes culture kind of move forward and in the directions it does, is because of its reactions to these things when they come out, whether that reaction is a good one, a bad one, or even ignoring. There's plenty of movies on these lists that we're probably not going to talk about because they didn't really move the needle anywhere. Like we just happened to go to two movies a week, so we saw some movies sometimes that were like, meh. Like were you with me when I saw Jet Li and Jason Statham's War?
War? Yes, I was.
And like, talk about a movie that does nothing.
Talk about a movie that like was too early. Because what War is Hobbs and Shaw as presented by the Fast and the Furious. It is.
Yeah, maybe.
It, well.
There's definitely some idea that seeing them more in villainous roles is weird and all that sort of stuff. And it's just, you know what it is? Is remember Righteous Kill, the really
Yeah.
weird Robert De Niro and Al Pacino movie, and it was supposed to be the answer to Heat because people remember Heat for the two of them, but people don't remember that in Heat, I think they have like one scene together for 10 minutes.
Right.
Isn't that the whole
Yeah,
shtick?
that's the whole
And
bit about
so
it.
people go like, oh, you want to see the two of them together, you got to watch Heat. And then you watch Heat and you're just like, fuck this, they were only in one scene together, right? So Righteous Kill was literally a movie built on the idea of what if we just put them on screen together all the time, right? And then they didn't make a movie around
Yeah, this is just, well,
it.
you guys are on camera now. We probably should have just done a Truman Show with this, but instead we did Righteous Kill.
It falls into that. So War falls in that same vein of two, of somebody out there said, we need to get Jet Li and Jason Statham in a movie together. And then they showed up on set and they were like, all right, guys, let's do this thing. And somebody went, oh, fuck, a movie. Shit. Right.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those movies that we saw together, and then we had a discussion about, and I
We will
think,
probably not talk about War outside of this context this year. I will
yeah,
play.
that's the thing. But the other thing, the thing that I'm really excited about with this particular year of very special episodes is we've done 35 very special episodes so far, and of those 35 things that we've experienced and talked about on the show, I can only think of maybe one or two that we experienced together for the first time. Like this year, every very special episode, Sijin and I watched that movie for the first time together.
Yeah, we
There is
were each
a
other's context.
Yeah, there is a shared consciousness that we have had going back 15 years that we are about to explore this year. Now there are some caveats. There are some small caveats that I do want to talk about. Last year on the show, we made a promise to cover Death Becomes Her as a very special episode for its 30-year anniversary, because that movie is 30 years old in 2022. With our very special episode plan to kind of be self-indulgent and talk about how culture shaped our friendship and the show in general, we have decided not to do a very special episode on Death Becomes Her. I apologize. I apologize mostly to Bruce Willis because again, he misses out on having a very special episode for
We don't talk about Bruno.
it. Beautiful. He just won the Say Report. And if you don't know why, I guess watch Encanto. But it's one of those situations where we still want to do Death Becomes Her, right? The 30th anniversary of Death Becomes Her, that's weirdly important as for all those things about shaping the culture or things that didn't move the needle. So we're going to do that as a time capsule episode. Sometime in season six, you're going to get a Death Becomes Her episode from us.
Also, apparently season six is the season in which we try and explain ourselves, because we never would have done that before.
No. But as we talked about last week, we have a plan with season six, right? We want to make sure that we get our movie.
Season
So,
six, the season we finally get our shit together.
you know, no, I mean it is only just for this. The regular episode stuff, that's still gonna be. I guess I'm talking about this empty can that's on my desk because I didn't do anything else this week. But yeah, so Death Becomes Her. It's still coming. The other thing is, it's the 20th anniversary of Spider-Man this mm-hmm. year, which is a very relevant movie with something like No Way Home coming out and blowing away all records. And we're going to experience and explore that first Spider-Man in May of this year. So you're going to get 4 months of us being like kind of navel-gazy with the movies that we watched together 15 years ago. Then you're going to get Spider-Man. So
yeah,
just
and
hang
you might say
there.
To yourself, hey, 2007, 15 years ago, didn't Spider-Man 3 come out that year? You could use that. And to which I say, shut up, we're getting to it.
Yeah, you're we'll ruining the surprise. So that's just an important thing to know. And I don't think there's anything else that's really like that. I think everything else is going to be that 2007 type of movies that we're going to be exploring. But I wanted to make sure that we explained ourselves a little bit with it, because it is sort of one of the most self-referential things we've ever done on the show, on a show that is based on self-referential things, specifically our philosophy and how we approach the world.
We don't ever earn the amount of inside jokes that we use on this show that nobody else is ever going to get but us. Like, we leave our audience at the dust on a regular basis because, you know, we're great podcasters. But this is one of those things where I hope, like, you can come along for the ride with us, because the idea being that, like, you've been with us already for 6 years, you know, and anybody that hasn't, you have the opportunity to, like, those episodes still exist. Podcasting lets you go back very easily. And, like, with that, like, we hope that we've built up enough of a repertoire with people over 6 years that we can do this, and we have earned this particular twist. Let's find out.
Yeah, let's find out. Plus, it's only one episode a month. Right? So if they're not for you, I mean, let us know so that we can try to make them for you. But also, we're probably still going
to
do them.
Well, and if you're curious, because again, you've never really listened to the special episodes, or you don't quite know what we do with these things, go back and listen to one, because we're not gonna stray too far from the old formula on how we talk about those movies. It's just keep in mind that what's going on with these movies is that these are movies that we saw for the first time with each other. So. Yeah.
They're very, very special. Very. I can't. If I keep putting "very"s in front of it, the word's going to lose all meaning.
It already does. Yeah. They.
Oh, I would like to share a life hack at this moment in the show. This seems like a thing.
Season 6, new bits. Devin's life hacks. Let's do it.
Are you aware of the fact that for $10 at Wendy's, you can get 52 chicken nuggets?
Oh, man, this is like, okay, wow, what? This is not just a life hack, Devin. You've broken my reality.
I apologize for breaking your reality. And prices and participation may vary, as you have to say. Wendy's, not a sponsor, but I was hungry this week, and the only thing that's nearby my office is a Wendy's, and I'm like, I want to get food, but then, like, I want to make sure I have food going forward. So I'm like, I'll get some nuggets, right? And they have I think it's 2 for $6 right now. You can get two 10-piece nuggets. So that's 20 nuggets for $6. But then I'm like, let's go down the rabbit hole. Let's see how deep these nugget deals go. And that's when I found out about the family's nugget, like, meal. And it's $10. And they give you 52 nuggets for $10.
What? How does that math work out? 52, is that that must be divisible by 6 at some point, or right?
So it comes in 5 large nugget boxes that are just full with nuggets. And it's about 20 cents a nugget.
No, it's not the math. No, it's not the per nugget. It's are they doing, they're clearly not doing like 10 4 nuggets. Like, what do they do? Like, is it... How does it break up? What is the divide? Do they just hand you just a bag full of nuggets, or is it like you get like a bunch of like 6 pieces or a bunch of 8 pieces, or what is the math?
8 pieces. I think it's supposed to be 4 8 pieces, because I went down a real deep hole with this nugget 40, stuff. It's 48 nuggets.
That's only 32 nuggets. 4 8 pieces.
No, yeah, that's right. 6 8 pieces. I'm sorry. So it's 8 6 pieces.
That's 64 nuggets. The math is weird,
Devin. No, 8 is 64. 6 times 8 is 48.
6 8 pieces, 48. Yeah. Yeah, so, okay.
But I got 52, and I went down a Reddit hole to try
to go to DoorDash right now
to try to figure it out.
Go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. You should. But I went on the Reddit, and there's a Reddit for everything. People who work at Wendy's are willing to share it. And someone said it's supposed to be 48 nuggets, but generally you'll get 50 plus.
Because they probably just
because they
do
just
a bag
fill
just
up a bag with nuggets. They're not counting individual nuggets. But your minimum is going to be 48, and I ended up walking away with 52. And it was $10, and I could have gotten sauce and all this other stuff with it. But let me tell you, you get 52 nuggets, 10 nuggets will cover you. So then I had lunch the rest of the week from this incredible thing on Wendy's.
Can't order right now. They're still closed. It's not even 11 a.m. here in Utah time, so I gotta wait.
Yeah, but
after the show, I'm ordering myself 50-something nuggets.
It was one of the coolest things that I have ever done, because they were hot and they were delicious. And of the nuggets, Wendy's nuggets heat up the best. So I ended up having nuggets for lunch the rest of the week.
Now the standard out here is spicy nugget. Like that is just like the standard flavor profile, weirdly, for fast food joints in Utah. And I think Midwest area. You call it the Midwest out here. People lose their
shit. By Midwest.
But for instance, McDonald's does not have a dollar menu chicken sandwich out here, but they do have a dollar menu spicy chicken sandwich. So the spicy McChicken is like you ask for a regular McChicken and people look at you like you have two heads. So with that in mind, Wendy's is the same way with the nuggets. Spicy nuggets is really kind of the default out here. If you say you want nuggets, are they including the spices in this? Is this like let's get down to the dirty true facts here. Where what are the rules and regulations of this deal?
I could have chosen original or spicy nuggets. I chose original because I just wanted quick nugget joy, and I can get a spicy chicken sandwich to go along with it, right? For that instant spiciness. But I was so thrown off by the fact that there's a family nugget bucket for $10.
I'm sorry. You didn't say till now
It's a platter. It's a family nugget platter. It's not really a bucket. I wish it were a bucket. But yeah, it's one of those situations where I'm like, this exists. I need to try it out. And I'm here to tell you, it's worth every penny. And there's your life hack, because 20 nuggets for $6 is okay, but double that for $10? No, 2.5 times that for $10? It's worth it. And you can get them spicy or original. They all have to be of one kind, though. That is the thing. You can't be like half original, half spicy.
Well, see, and there's the rub then. You know, no variety. Like, despite the fact that I'd end up getting spicy nuggets, there'd be no spice to my life. That's how disappointing.
I would really like it if it was like roulette.
Spicy. Introduce a third nugget, right? Yeah, some of these are spicy, some of these aren't. You don't know which are which. And then there's one guacamole nugget somewhere in here.
I feel like you could point out a guacamole nugget fairly easy.
Yeah, you think so, but it's not the green one. That's actually, never mind.
Yeah, that green nugget's not supposed to be in there.
That's not supposed to be there. Ignore that one. Look, we gave you 50 of them. One of them's not so good. Throw it out, eat the rest, you're fine.
Yeah, it's like the green chip in potato chip bags. That's a weird episode of Arthur, where DW thinks she's going to die because she ate a green potato chip. We're not talking about
Arthur
on this show.
And then she does. And then they have to fucking CSI lays on Arthur.
That's why Arthur's making that fist, because his sister died because she ate a green potato chip.
He's about
so
to go
angry.
Gunpowder milkshake on everybody. Yeah.
Wow. What a crazy thing we've done here just now. You know what else I like? You know, I like to, just gives me sort of calmness as we go through the world in this insane thing that we're living right now, is I like to think about the fact that Darth Vader's grandson and Emperor Palpatine's granddaughter ended up hooking up, even if briefly.
I mean, look, I think that's one of the most believable things in the entire Star Wars canon, but you say that in some circles and you get crucified.
It's the most believable thing in the Star Wars canon, is that Darth Vader and Palpatine existed as apprentice and master in a time where that
Emperor
could only
Palpatine,
be professional.
Yeah.
But 3 generations later, it can be romantic. And that's really nice for me.
Well, there was a lot more work from home once the empire fell, and you got to understand, we had to make some sacrifices.
Oh my God. Can we talk about just brief the fact that in Force Awakens, they're like, we just built a bigger Death Star.
I mean, but that's like when the reveal in, is it, it's Empire, right? Where after everything in the first movie about blowing up the Death Star and about how important it is that they do this, they just reveal that they could just build a second one. It pulls all the wind out of the sails. Like, people want to talk about, like, that silly-ass writing about, like, oh, we just built a bigger Death Star. That's, like, the third time in the series that that's been done. You can't act like it's a surprise that that's what they went back to. That's the well they've been dipping into since literally the second movie.
I know. No, and I'm not upset about that. It's the fact that from the Empire's perspective, we got to do something else, right? We got to stop building Death Stars. We should build one of those, like, those giant star cruisers that has a planet killer laser on it. The technology has to have gotten smaller, right? Years have passed.
You got to understand, though, that when you're like, when you're Emperor Palpatine, and you have the ability to just land on a planet and eradicate everybody, and you've done that probably a few times, if the lore is to be believed, that's just what you've done. You get to a point where you don't even want to take the time to get down there anymore, right? Like, you just want to do the drive through at that point. And so that's why you invent the Death Star. And when that doesn't work, you just invent another one, because your fallback is still a pretty solid fallback. You just don't want to do it.
You're lazy, right? Yeah. You're in the winter of your life. I don't want to be. I can't be going to planets to do this. I need to find an easier way. It's just what I really
It's the equivalent of it's the equivalent of working in tech and like fucking automating your job and then spending the next 3 years of your life just like, oh, Windows is updating. I got to rewrite my code real quick on that Excel sheet. Okay, this is the only work I've done in the last 2 years, but it's definitely made it worth it. Now I'm gonna collect my six figure job. I mean, it's like that's all they're trying to do. They're just a bunch of fucking coders who are just trying to get away with the fact that they aren't doing any real work all day.
Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to laziness. Might be my new favorite motto. That's brilliant, and it's so true. Right?
It's me at every job I've ever had. Yes.
That's thumbs up, Siege, and I'm glad to get this glimpse into how you live your life. And it's all filtered through Star Wars, which eventually we're going to talk about Book of Boba Fett. Have you been watching Book of Boba Fett at all?
I have not.
Okay, good. So yeah. So
I got to say that, like, I've taken a huge break from a lot of the more what's the word I'm looking for? Insightful media for the time being.
Okay, that seems fair.
And it might also be part of the reason why I was hesitant to go too deep into Peacemaker, but now that I've heard general consensus on it, I'm happy to go to it because it doesn't seem like too many people are bitching about it on the internet. But that whole idea that the of diving into the Star Wars universe and not being able to talk about it right now with anybody is really kind of disappointing. Like, it was one of those things that, like, when The Mandalorian first started and it was really good and people seemed to really like it, it was really fun to, like, to watch and to talk about, and it was right when the pandemic started, right? I've got that timing right.
It was 2019, I believe, was The Mandalorian. No, it's been 2 years, so... Yeah, no, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, so that idea being that, like, I already had limited interaction with people, and in that limited interaction, talking about a thing that we liked was what I wanted to do. The second that people started getting really weird about Star Wars again, even with The Mandalorian and talking about some stuff that they suddenly were like the specifically, I'm thinking of like the whole Episode 5 like backlash where people were like, "Oh, there was finally a bad one." Like, those conversations, I didn't want to be a part of, and so it really kind of drove me away from wanting to really kind of like dive too deep into that stuff or talk about it with anybody. And it's been hard to confront new media in any way because people have just been so like vile about some stuff, and it's only gotten worse because the only voices we're hearing now are internet voices,
right?
Because we can't go outside, right? And so I got to say that if anybody's been wondering why over the last couple of years, it seems like I have kind of stepped away from making sure that I am like on top of everything every week for this show. It's because, first of all, this show doesn't require that of me. If like at the end of the day, we've had plenty of good conversation despite that. And then the other side of that is that it's for my own health, my own mental health and sanity, man. Like I don't know if I can necessarily dive into Book of Boba Fett right now because I don't want to touch the Star Wars community right now, period. Like, you know, like I will one day come back to that, and I enjoy that stuff on my own. The problem is that I don't, like, half the fun of watching a show like Book of Boba Fett is to then get to talk about it with somebody, and right now nobody seems to want to talk about Star Wars and not get gross.
Yeah, I get that. It's actually one of the reasons why the pandemic has affected me. For Mandalorian, I didn't really want to watch that first season because, I mean, it's on my driver's license. I don't like Star Wars. I'm not a fan of Star Wars. So Mandalorian, I'm like, you know, I'm not really there for this. Like, I just finished the last trilogy, and I'm kind of okay having a breather from it. But yeah. Then, like, with a weekend and nothing much to do, we sat down and we watched it once it was all available, and it was a fun romp for 8 episodes of television.
Right.
And I was glad that I did it. But then the second season came along, and it was again like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I'm on board for watching this every week. And again, I waited, and I did it as one big binge, and I got to enjoy the full story, and I got to avoid a lot of that toxicity that went along with the discussions, right?
Yeah.
Even where, like, I did feed into, like, where I didn't really like that Bill Burr episode of the first season, but mostly because I didn't think that they moved away from it enough. Like, you do an episode like that, it should be completely different, not like safe different. You know what I'm talking about with safe different?
Yeah, no, I get it. If you're gonna go to town, you might as well go in a Lincoln. I get the attitude for sure.
Yeah,
it was very clearly an episode meant to establish itself as not like every other episode.
Right.
to paraphrase there, but in doing that, kind of showed how it's just like every other episode, which is inevitably what happens at the end of that phrase. Yeah, no, I get it. And that's just it. Is it's not that I don't want to have good, meaningful discussion about, like, things in the show that we love, don't necessarily love, why don't we love them, but here's why we love them anyway. Like, I love those kinds of conversations. This whole show is that. This has been our you and I's whole relationship.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I can't talk to just 20 Devons online, like, unfortunately. It's just not possible.
I'm sorry, Cajun.
There ain't many other people like you, right? Like, with that idea, like, I needed to make sure that I was being very careful about how I engaged with certain aspects of the world at a point when our worlds became very, very small all of a sudden. We all ended up stuck in our houses, and our only real windows to anything outside of our own house was what we already know to be a very dangerous mechanism in the internet, right? And like with being aware of that, I've just had to really kind of temper some things. You know, it was why me and the fam dove into doing a Wes Anderson watch, was because for us, Wes Anderson was safe. Even some of his worst films, and there are some bad ones, were still enjoyable and fun to us because of specific elements that we had seen in other films and things that we do like, and so we were able to do that. Like, I knew going in, this is what we're getting into, this is the kind of fun we're gonna have, and I know we can pull it off. Boom. And that's what we did. And it's been really hard for us to get back on the ball of doing that with anybody else, because, like, I've had, you know, like, people in the house have requested, like, you know, I've never really seen much of Kevin Smith, can we do that? And I don't mind doing that, but you and I have had this exact conversation about how, for a lot of people, especially if it's their first time kind of getting into his stuff nowadays, there's some hard conversations to have, and I just don't know if I have it in me to have those conversations right now, you know? And the same goes with somebody like Tarantino and stuff, too. Like there are all of these other directors that we've thought about, like trying that with, and it just doesn't work like it does for us and the world of Wes Anderson. And part of that is because there really isn't many other directors that everyone in the house has really kind of dove into before. It would be me introducing. And it's like, that's the worst feeling in the world, telling your friend to watch this funny YouTube video, and then you sit there and watch them react to it the whole time, right? Like, I didn't want to be doing that either, right? So it's been really hard for me to kind of jump onto anything in particular in any meaningful way. And that's true of movies, television, video games, all of that sort of stuff. Because of the fact that, like, right now, I have very, very, very limited people around me that I can then talk to about it. And I don't want to like risk like having a shit conversation. I don't want to risk having a bad, you know, this is the only time we're having people over the house all month. And I spent the entire night bitching to them about how they don't understand the latest doctor from Doctor Who and how important it is that it's a woman. I don't want to be that guy.
You don't want to be that guy. No. But,
right, right.
And I understand exactly. I, especially even here, like where we get to the Saturday classics is the first thing we did on Saturday is we did the entire Marvel catalog, right? Start to finish. And that was because my mother was like, there are some movies that I missed. And I'm like, well, now that there's going to be TV shows and we're probably going to watch those, it's probably a good time for all of us to revisit and understand the world. And then going forward, we'll make sure that we don't miss stuff so that we don't have to do like a big backlog catch up ever again. Mm-hmm. And that's been really nice. I will admit that. The fact that we were able to do WandaVision without anything. The fact that when Eternals dropped last Wednesday, the whole family was like, let's sit down and watch it. Yeah. And because we want to make sure that we're up to date and that it's one time and then we know everything, right? And they might not ever watch it again. And even like my father and mother both fell asleep during the Eternals, but both of them were like, we got the gist of it. We understand what it's going to mean going forward. And if we want to, we'll rewatch it. But I don't really feel the need to, which makes me a little sad because I love Eternals. And having rewatched it a second time, it's probably my favorite bit of MCU fiction from last year. Certainly movie-wise. Television, I think Hawkeye may edge it out just a little bit. Because of just how personal that was. But we can talk about that at another time. But it's one of those situations. But then we followed up the MCU with Quentin Tarantino. And by Death Proof, my father was completely out. He's like, I don't really want to watch these anymore. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. And I also understand why he would come to that. Because he had seen all of the movies post-Death Proof. It was really movies prior to Death Proof that he had never seen. So he got to, like, he had never seen Reservoir Dogs. He had never seen Jackie Brown. So he got to experience those movies. And I don't think those really worked for him, which is why he's like, I'm kind of out going forward. So then the safest thing to do was to compile this list of like 1,001 movies to see before you die. But, you know, Decker oriented, right? Because I don't think American Pie is going to be on that 1,001 movies to see before you die. But from a Decker standpoint, it's worth watching to understand how it affected culture after it came out.
In your very house, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
It didn't just affect like the world; like it affected very specifically you and the people that interacted with you.
Yes. Right? So it's been cool to do that sort of thing and make it like a smaller, sort of more self-contained, this is what we're watching thing, because the whims of the outside world really don't matter. And it's been interesting to do it. And yeah, I'm right there with you. And watching the Kevin Smith stuff, I mean, we did it to prepare for the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. And when three movies in, Dale was like, I'm done. I can't do any more of these. I couldn't fight her on that. Because after watching those three movies again, like, you can listen to the show and see how I felt about them again. Like,
whereas, like, on my own, I have done that stuff with like just of my own like desire, but then not talked about it with anybody because I just don't want to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that's really kind of really hit me in the last couple of years. And like the joke is everybody's got a podcast, right? And really what that equates to is like everybody's opinion is available everywhere now on everything, right? And that idea being that we somehow now have gotten into a habit, and maybe this isn't true because, you know, I don't know what I don't know, but it feels like every time somebody sees a thing, they then feel that they need to voice their opinion out in the world about it. And like that is a huge thing about what drives me to do this show is feeling that is what you're supposed to do nowadays. Like that is the conversation, right? On top of that, like I literally went to school for a decade to talk about how to talk about culture and the ways in which it affects the world around me and my you know, my politics and my personal life and all of that stuff. So like this is what I've spent my whole life like being trained to do too, right? So maybe that's where this comes from. But it feels like with things like podcasts and Twitter and even, you know, Instagram and to a lesser degree nowadays, of Facebook, like the idea being that like you need to go out there and you need to let people know what you think about a Marvel movie when a Marvel movie comes out. You need to let the world know what you think about the new deal for Burger King and the latest like craze and like the spicy chicken sandwich wars or whatever the hell they're calling them now. Like you need to get in on all that stuff because that's just what the zeitgeist is telling us all to do nowadays. And I've really learned in the last couple of years how I don't need to take part in that, whether or not it's true that the world is demanding it of me. I don't need to meet that demand, you know, and I may be slowly realizing that the world was not really asking me to do that. I just kind of felt like it was, you know, and but I think a lot of people feel that way, though. I don't think I'm alone in feeling that the world kind of wants to know what we're up to, and maybe it doesn't always need to.
What you've stumbled into is the next evolution of the terrorist marketing that we talked about with Marvel. And really, mm-hmm. It's not that the world wants you to go out there and form an opinion on the latest chicken sandwich. It's that corporations do. Corporations are so hyped up on starting this. You need to have an opinion on everything that happens. And it's really just a way of marketing new experiences to us, because I think most people would be happy going to McDonald's and just getting a Big Mac fries and a soda. But if mm-hmm. McDonald's introduces a new chicken sandwich or a new sandwich with like, it's got 4 strips of bacon on it, like the marketing is you need to try it so you can tell your friends about it. Mm-hmm. And it really stems from that other thing that I said, that we have engineered a generation of reviewers, right? It started with the millennials and book reports and everything else that our education was. And now that Gen Z is out there and they're the ones who are making the YouTube content and everything like that, that is all we have, is people who can go out and share their opinion on the things that exist in this world.
Do you know something that I learned about this week that, like, I think I kind of always knew it was there, but I didn't realize that, like, how big it was, because is Twitch specifically, but this, I'm sure this happens on other streaming services like Facebook streaming and stuff too, but Twitch has an entire subsect of it where the idea is it's just people watching TV like with you, and like sometimes it's providing commentary, or they think they're providing commentary, but they're not really doing much other than just watching the show. Sometimes it is like critical analysis, like we're going to watch the episode together and then afterwards we'll talk about it. But like it is a large portion of streaming services nowadays, of specifically content creator style streaming services, not just like Netflix and Hulu, but like where there is like a person that is setting themselves up in their you know, personal studio, basement, whatever it is, to like look into a camera and talk to you. A large part of that is focused very much nowadays on just like watching movies and TV show in real time. Like, not just like, hey, I went to go see this thing and here's my opinions on it. It's like, hey, Eternals just dropped on Disney Plus, so we're going to spend the day starting at 12 Eastern watching the movie, and you can sit and watch the movie with me and my wife while we watch it, and then afterwards I'm going to hang out with you guys and discuss it for a couple of hours. And like, I this just feeds into what you're talking about, is like we have bred a form of entertainment here that is so far removed from anything I ever wanted out of the internet. But like, apparently people watch it. Apparently this is a huge thing, especially because you can get into stuff where you get these like these celebrity ones where like, hey, like we're going to have like Pokimane like watch this movie with us this week and talk about it. That's not like her bag usually as far as streaming goes, but it is now a big enough subsect of the industry that she feels it benefits her to guest on one or two of those episodes, versus like it also benefits them to pull in somebody that's got a 3 million subscriber base that literally just want to just watch her eat soap. Like they'll do anything, like they
you
watch
mean soap or soup there?
I know I meant soap.
I just wanted to make sure.
Like people will do anything to watch certain people do stuff on the internet, and like, and if it means donating $5 to a guy that sits around and watatches Loki 6 times in a year and then like reviews it at the end, it's just such a weird, like, we have made the act of consumption something to consume. It blew my mind when I really realized how deep the rabbit hole went. Because like I said, the idea of like we're gonna watch a thing and then talk about it, that's been part of the format since radio. Like, that's been around. But this idea that you can now participate in both, not just the critiquing, but the consumption of the product together with your reviewer, like, is really appealing on paper, but really kind of scary in practice. Like, watching how this is just how some people make their money now, is they get on Twitch 4 days out of the week to, like, watch a movie and talk about it. People donate $100, but and suddenly they're surviving, and I guess that's good. Like, they're filling a niche I didn't realize needed to be filled, I guess.
The issue is that the corporate overlords have realized that is out there, and it is something that can be mined for profit.
Oh, yeah.
Because Twitch, specifically, as a subsidiary of Amazon, they're able to show the NFL games, right? Because Amazon does the Red Zone. So every Sunday, we're like, I don't care about every game, I just want to see the most exciting parts of them. You put on the Red Zone network, and you get that. But because they already have those NFL broadcast rights, Twitch partners are given the ability to watch the NFL games on their channel and provide real-time commentary. And that's so strange to me, because I think of the sports reporters like Bob Ryan or Michael Wilbon or millions of other people that I could name, and it's interesting to have them talk about it the day afterwards. But then these streamers who, like, I don't even really know, because they've been really pushing it for the wild card weekend, that all of these streamers, each of them is going to have a exclusive access to one of the games so you can watch and get their reactions in real time. And I don't know any of them from Adam or Eve. So that's strange to me. Like, why do I care what this person has to say about this football game? But then also what that is, it's Nickelodeon showing an NFL game in order to try to inspire a new generation of NFL fans, right? We'll put it into something that you already like with people that you already know, and maybe you'll also start to like the product. So it's somebody who's already watching Streamer Girl X, who's going to be watching an NFL game, and because their Sunday is always spent with Streamer Girl X, they're being exposed to this product, and Amazon and Twitch are already making the money from your sub or your bits or your donations that you're giving to her as a partner, but hopefully you're interested enough in football after this experience that you continue giving money to this corporation and your time to this corporation. And it's one thing when it was like content creators just kind of doing it, but now that corpos have their finger on the pulse of that and are injecting content to be consumed, it really feels sort of dirty to me.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but I also think about the fact that, like, with gaming YouTube, that's the same path that took, because for a long time it was content creators that were like, I spent my own money on this game on Steam, let's play it and talk about it. Like, that is something that has been part of gaming YouTube since its inception, right? But in the last 10 years, gaming companies have learned it benefits us to send an early release to this particular reviewer, to the point where then YouTube had to step in and be like, all right, but they have to at least explain what the fuck is going on. They don't get to just get all this free shit from you and then talk about how much they love your game. There needs to be some understanding from the audience that, like, and I don't mean to make YouTube sound like the good guys here. They only did it because of immense pressure from people in the right places. But YouTube did step in and say that. So now it's not uncommon to see somebody say, hey, this episode is sponsored by Epic Games. Now let's talk about Tap Heroes for the next 20 minutes and why it's the best thing ever. Also, you can get my little Tap Hero emoji in the game if you use my code below. Like, that kind of shit, it's selling out. Like, on a large scale, in a negative light, it is selling out eventually all of these streamers, and that's kind of the dream, though, right? Is like, I'm going to produce enough content that at some point, you know, like, Valve is going to come to me and say, hey, we'll give you like 10 free games a year as long as you talk about how great Valve is in the middle of every episode, right? And like, that's just inevitable in the industry, and in a lot of ways good for the industry, because it means that it has become legitimate enough that the capitalist machine of this country has taken notice of it and has decided, well, rather than destroy it, I'm going to come in and do what I can to get my ducat too, right? And in the grand scheme of things, like, that feels like that's the pathway you've always wanted. Now, are there people out there trying to break that pathway, trying to say there's other ways of doing this, there's better ways of doing this? Of course. And God, I hope they succeed. But like, that doesn't change the fact that there's also people out there that this is the goal, like, is to do this kind of thing. And so that's where I kind of feel like, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, yes, it's super gross when companies get involved and have and get to like put their thumb on the scale like that. And that should always be called out and recognized. Right. But the idea being that, like, there are people out there that this is the kind of content they want to consume, like, and it's now being created in a way that it couldn't before. Like, that's awesome. You know, I'm the kind of guy that, like, still to this day will on a whim drop a couple of bucks on a Riff Tracks commentary track to sit down and watch, like, Twilight, you know, like, it, like, cause that was so, like, that was such a weird, unique part of, like, of our age group's mm-hmm. culture, of the idea that, like, remember there were like groups of kids that would do entire YouTube videos that were commentaries on Harry Potter movies, and people would sit around and listen to, like, the Harry Potter commentary on the YouTube channel while they watched the movie. So, like, again,
I mean,
we did
that with Three Friends in a Movie. You were a guest on that show that we did, that was not even, that wasn't even meant to be commentaries for it. That was like, you get to watch a movie with us. So the stupid comments that we make that might not even be related to what's on, you get to feel like you have friends for a movie.
So the thing that hit me is the realization that that has become so big that it is literally just like a genre on Twitch. Like, watch party has become like a genre in streaming, like in the streaming lexicon. So like people are now doing this on a regular basis. It Let's Watch is going to be the next Let's Play, right? Like, it's pretty wild that that's one of the ways that things have been going. But in the context of what the last couple of years have been, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Devin Decker, always ahead of his time and getting out right before it gets profitable. No, I'm not really that cynical. It's just, yeah, when Seijin calls Three Friends in a Movie the predecessor to the watch party nadir that's going on right now, I feel a certain way about it. But I think that's a pretty good time to start to wind this one down. Chair Watch 2022. I haven't heard anything about my chair, so nothing really exciting there. But that's why what we're going to introduce, because it's a little more prescient, is Keyboard Watch 2022. And that is Ducky Keyboards, not a sponsor. They've introduced a new line of their One series. They're called the One Threes. And they have a keyboard that just looks tailor-made for the Say Report. I took one look at it, and I figured, this is what Seijin and I should have on our desks while we're recording. So I ordered them, and I've had one sent out to Seijin, and I have one that's supposed to be coming to the house. And they were supposed to be released on January 4th. So we're, 3 weeks past that at this point?
Yeah, man.
There's
a lot of things we're going to have to touch on next week, but you're right. We should be definitely winding on this episode in terms of things like supply chains and releases
and all of that.
Some scams in the collectible world that I really want to talk about.
Oh, there's going to be some fun things to talk about. But right now, the Say Report, both of us are on keyboard watch for when the new keyboards for our setups will be coming in. So right now, one of the other ones, I have a Ducky 1-3 in front of me because it arrived just before we were going to start recording today. So they're out there in the world, just not the crazy hyper yellow ones that we got to represent the fact that we're Say reporters.
yeah, man.
But they are out there, so we should have them soon. So that's the other thing that we're waiting for.
Cool.
Anything else that you want to add, Seijin, before we send this one off to the vault?
I had a Chair Watch Junior this week. You mentioned like a chair for your setup and stuff like that, and I didn't necessarily need that because for every job that I've left in this state in the last 3 years, they keep giving me a bunch of shit from the office. But what I did need was one to chill out and play video games on, right? Like something just small to sit on, and I've been kind of looking for one for a while. And I had ordered a memory foam sitting pillow, like meant specifically for like dining around small tables and things like that. And it was supposed to get here, didn't get here, was supposed to get here, and then it finally just showed up like yesterday, and it's now like reinflating because, you know, with memory foam, you got to give it like 48 hours to get back to full size.
Yeah.
So I thought we were going to be on Chairwatch Junior here for my sitting implement, but it finally came in yesterday. So within like a week, I had my ups and downs with my chair. I hope yours gets here soon. That's
I
all.
Cannot wait to have just an ounce of the joy that you seem to possess from a successful Chairwatch Junior. All right. So if in the meantime you would like to share with us some of the movies you hope or think we're going to be exploring with our very special episodes in 2022, part of season 6 of the Say Report, I am available on Twitter at Devin D. Decker and would love to hear from you.
And if you have any more of some really nice behind-the-scenes orders that I can make at my local fast food joints, hit me up at Siege versus the World.
Yeah, Siege, go out there. Try this family nugget platter. You'll be glad you did. All right, and with that, William, please bring us home. Have a good one, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Say Report with your host, Devin Decker and Stephen Serwick. Please follow the guys on Twitter and Facebook by searching for The Say Report. And you can always subscribe on your podcast channel so this is delivered straight to you and you can enjoy it every week. With apologies to your mother, we'll see you next time.